Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Welcome to KMOX, Overnight America. No, it's not Ryan Recker sitting in this evening. Brad Young handling the big, sitting in the big chair, the big Overnight America chair, filling in for Ryan Recker this evening. And I'm taking off my attorney hat. I did my job today and put all that aside. Come on tonight just to have fun with you. But I will mention this. Folks have always asked me to make sure and give my email address. I always forget. So I just got it written down here to do this so I don't have to worry about it the rest of the show. If you want to email me at any time during the show, during the day, never a problem. My email address is byoung, that's good to be young, B-Y-O-U-N-G, at harrisdowell.com, H-A-R-R-I-S, D as in David, O-W-E-L-L.com. Love to hear from you at any point in time, whether it's about radio, about legal stuff, whatever it is, love to hear from you at any time. Before we look at what's on tap, I've got to tell you, I've been filling in a lot for Ryan recently, and I asked Ryan, what he was going to be doing here, the night before New Year's. And he said basically he was going to be hanging at home, playing like backgammon with his family, I think is what he said. So what I did was I turned on and I put an app on his phone so we could hear, the exciting details of the Recker household playing backgammon. So I don't think he can tell that we're going to turn this on. So, producer Zach here, turn on that app so we can listen to Ryan Recker playing backgammon in the Recker household. That does not sound like backgammon. Hey, Ryan. when does backgammon involve drinks with umbrellas? I'm not exactly sure. That does not sound like I've played backgammon, folks. It never sounds like that. So we'll check in Zach a little bit later with Ryan and see how he's doing with the backgammon game. But in the meantime, we've got lots of things on tap this evening here on Overnight America, and one of the things my family groans at me all the time about the silly things that I say, and one of my little technical things involves when does the decade actually end? Because if you read the news today, all these news stories and polls talking about the end of the decade, the end of the 2010s, the decade ends today. Well, folks, I hate to be a wet blanket here, but the decade does not end tomorrow. The 2010s actually will not end until December 31st of 2020. Now, if you're keeping score, this is why it works that way. There is no year zero in the Anno Domini system. AD, after death, Anno Domini. There is no year zero. The first year in our calendaring system was a year number one. So if you look at what's the first decade in existence, it's year one through 10. The second decade of our calendar system was year 11 through 20. So in this instance, 2019 is not the end of the decade. Technically, that doesn't happen until this time next year. Now, when I point that out to my family, they groan, they throw things at me. I have to pick up, devices to shield my face. It gets rather difficult in the young household, but technically that's the way it is. But despite that, that legal technicality here about when the decade actually ends, there is lots of things to talk about in terms of how we are winding up the end of this alleged decade. So I will use the term alleged decade. So probably in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to get into some of the trends about this past decade, maybe some of the things that are the highlights of the decade, the lowlights of the decade. And at that point, we'll probably want to open the phone lines to get your input on that as well. Also coming up in this particular hour, we've got an author we're going to talk to. But before we get to that, I don't know if you heard, sure you did, you heard Megan Lynch's newscast at the top of the hour. The loop trolley. I mean, of all the things, it's been riddled with controversy, with problems, with errors, with being underfunded, with being underutilized, by going nowhere and starting nowhere. All of these problems with the loop trolley for the past 13 months. And on the last day, the possible last trip of the last trolley, of the last ride of the loop trolley, what happens? The thing breaks down. You couldn't make that up. Of all the things that happen, you know, you'd think they would be working around the clock to say, okay, guys, here's the huddle. We're in the loop trolley huddle. We cannot let this thing break down on the last ride. But, you know, it did. So that's a story that practically writes itself. Also, later in the show tonight, we're going to hear from John Stossel. Now, you remember John Stossel? Years ago, he was on Fox News, not so much anymore. He's basically working full-time for Reason Magazine. And we're going to hear from John Stossel because there's a fascinating idea of, is life in America getting better or is it getting worse? And we're going to hear his perspective and his take on life in America. We're also going to talk about technology trends for this decade. We're going to look at, like, for example, the death of the landline telephone. That happened during this past decade, the death of the landline phones. I mean, they're still around, but who has a landline phone? You know, I don't know, grandparents maybe, but that's about it. My mother-in-law, who is, forgive me in advance, she's 92 years old, she spends her day on Facebook, okay? So she's really embraced technology, but for some of us, they haven't. But the point is, you know, the landline was such quintessential America. So we'll look at that. We've got lots of things on tap for this evening. And coming up after this break, we'll be talking to Beth Kramer. Beth is the author of a new book entitled Why Didn't I Notice Her Before?, which is fascinating because it chronicles her journey through stage 4 ovarian cancer, through the diagnosis, the treatments, and how it's changed her perspective on life. We're going to talk to author Beth Kramer coming up right after this. I'm glad you're with us this evening on Overnight America. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Overnight America. Brad Young sitting in for Ryan Recker. And while we're trying to get Beth Kramer on the phone, there's a couple of other things that that we're going to be discussing tonight. And then we're going to get into some of the things that Beth Kramer is going to talk about. But there's a woman in Tennessee. Now, right now, so many of us, how many times do you post, whether it's on, you post online reviews, like Yelp reviews? Well, right now, there's a woman in Tennessee who's being sued for posting a negative online review of a doctor. So she went to the doctor, you know, didn't have that great of an experience. And then at that point, she got sued because she wrote about that experience. So after we talk to after we finish talking to Beth Kramer and probably later on in the show, I'm going to get into the legalities of, can people be sued for posting negative online reviews? And more importantly, I'm going to go through with you some of the things that you can do if you do like to post online reviews, and certainly I do, and my kids do, and you probably do too, what you can do to reduce the chances that you'll be sued because you post a negative review. I'll tell you something that doesn't have a negative review, and that's the book written by Beth Kramer, because she is an accomplished editor, a director of independent films. She has directed commercials and music videos, but in 2017, Beth Kramer was diagnosed with stage 4 ovarian cancer. And in her memoir, Why didn't I notice her before? She documents her experience as a mother, as a wife, as a sister, as a daughter. All of the roles that she filled, she documents how those roles were challenged and how her outlook was changed as a result of going through stage 4 ovarian cancer. Beth Kramer, welcome to KMOX.
Hello, thank you.
Glad you could join us this evening. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Your book, Why Didn't I Notice Her Before, as I just set up, it chronicles your, really, it really starts before your diagnosis of cancer, and it takes you through up to the present. How did, let's just start at the beginning, Beth, how did hearing your diagnosis change your perspective on life?
Well, yeah, cancer was a catalyst for change in my life. I was experiencing a lot of regret. I had a lot of fears. I was really very, very mean to myself, actually, for about 7 years. I had sort of a post-traumatic stress disorder, and I'm not going to give it away because you've got to read the book. But when I heard those three words, you have cancer, it kind of made sense. Like there was nowhere else to go with with beating myself up. And it made me face the now. It made me really step into the moment, and all of my angst just literally went away. It's very strange. It's hard to explain, but I reached clarity immediately.
Well, I found your book compelling, and I found it fascinating. And in chapter 15, you write about sending a letter to the parents of your son's friends at school. Mm-hmm. And you write, I just took one quote out of it. You wrote this in the note to your kid's friend's parents. This is what you wrote. "Will an illness as serious as this teach me that I no longer need to fix things and I can finally release my grip and get on with living?" So how was it that this kind of an event changed your outlook? Because that's a pretty substantial statement or admission of a changed outlook. How did that process happen for you?
Well, I mean, it's something that I can't really explain. I certainly wouldn't welcome cancer on anybody's life, but it definitely shook me free of these feelings of regret, things that I couldn't fix. And I knew that the future was so uncertain that all I had was the now. All I had mm-hmm. was what was right in front of me, my family, my husband, my son, my sisters, my mother, my father. And that's all that I could focus on. It didn't make sense to focus on anything else at that point.
Well, one chapter of your book is entitled, Should I Fight? Was that a decision that you wrestled with?
It was. It's complicated when you're living with somebody else who loves you so much and wants to say, I want you to do what's right for you. And that was my husband at that point. It's so complicated. I think I really have to go back and read my words in the chapter that I wrote. But I think he wanted what was best for me. Ultimately, I had to fight for everybody else. I had to do what it took to fight for everybody else. I could have just said, I'm going to try holistic healing. I'm going to not do the work, the chemotherapy. But eventually I had to do what was right for everybody. I had to live
right,
for everybody else.
But that was a decision that you had to make, because you could have, as you just said, you could have just taken a back seat and said, I'll just handle what comes and I'll deal with it as it arrives. But you chose to fight, and that's a decision that I don't think everyone who has been in your situation reaches that same decision.
You know, I looked at alternative therapies. I looked at other things that I could do. Ultimately, and I know I sound cavalier when I say this, but going the Western route of first-line therapy, surgery, and then chemotherapy, it felt easy for me to show up and do that work, show up, sit in the chair, have the IV put in, and have those horrible chemicals, put into my body. But ultimately, it did save me. Nothing else is proven. And I did have my family. In the end, I had the support of my family. And I think that was the most important part of my healing.
Yeah, that sounds like that was key for you. And we're talking to to author Beth Kramer. She's the author of the new book, Why Didn't I Notice Her Before?, which, as you can hear, it chronicles her journey through stage four ovarian cancer. I recently read an interview with a hospice chaplain who was asked the following. She was asked, what do dying people talk about? And certainly for a long part of your diagnosis and treatment, you are still in that stage of, we're not really sure how this is going to turn out. But the hospice chaplain, Beth, said this. She said, dying people mainly want to talk about the past memories and their past regrets and their past dealings with family members. Did you go through that, or were you looking forward rather than backwards?
Wow, yes, no. That's fascinating. I'm only looking forward. And that's why when the title, Dying to Live, it makes so much sense to me. It's like, I wasn't dying to live prior to this. I questioned my living. Now I have a new need to live, a new want, and new creativity has come from this. So, you know, I feel I'm lucky. It's fueled the creativity, the cancer. Mm. It's fascinating. I didn't know that I was so funny. I mean, all humor came from it. Everything was funny. There was so much irony. I'm definitely not looking backwards. I'm looking at the moment.
You
not
mentioned
in the future, but yeah.
At the moment, you mentioned funny or irony. What comes to mind when you think that? What were some of your experiences that were funny to you or ironic? What comes to your mind?
Well, I life itself, the irony and the betrayal. The betrayal is not really the right word, but it was funny because I had been so seriously angry with myself for things that I thought I did wrong. And so when you hear you have cancer and you don't have long to live, it just struck me as funny. Like, wow, I was really mean to myself for no reason. Hmm. And I think also certain like bodily functions can be funny if written about in a certain way. I don't know. I struggled for so long
Sure. Only
to find clarity in cancer. That's funny.
It is funny, but I like how you said finding clarity, because to me that was the theme of your book was finding clarity, and it took going through this process for you to find clarity on living. You mentioned someone I've actually read before. You mentioned in your book that you read the book Love, Medicine, and Miracles by Bernie Siegel, and I've read things from Bernie Siegel before. How did that book impact your views on how recovery in so many situations depends on our willingness to believe that we can influence our medical outcome?
Well, at the beginning of my journey, I had read his book, and I was very offended by the idea that positivity could cure cancer. I felt like that was a heck of a lot of pressure to put on somebody who might be depressed or have some kind of anxiety, that if I felt positively and I could be hopeful that I would cure my cancer. I felt that was just a wrong thing to say to somebody who had just discovered they had cancer. Now, almost two years later, and I thought that I possibly even caused my cancer by my angst. I thought I targeted my organs, my ovaries, through my own depression. So things have flipped for me, where I felt like what he was saying, where positivity can cure cancer, and I thought it was completely wrong. I'm now actually questioning if that's possible. It might be possible.
Well, it certainly is possible, as we've seen in so many medical studies, that a person's outlook affects their body's ability to fight infection, to fight cancer, to fight the disease process. Our state of mind is so critically important when we're going through those trying physical challenges. We're talking to author Beth Kramer, and we're going to take a break, Beth. If you can stick around with us through the break, I've got some more questions for you. She's the author of Why Didn't I Notice Her Before? Fascinating article chronicling not so much the treatment, although it goes through that, but how her outlook and positive outlook drove her through that process. I'm glad she's with us this evening on Camo X. I'm glad you're with us this evening on Overnight America. We'll be right back on Camo X. Welcome back to Overnight America. We're talking this evening to author Beth Kramer. She's the author of the new book, Why Didn't I Notice Her Before?, which really goes through her journey of stage four ovarian cancer and how it changed her perspectives on life, how it changed how she dealt with her family, how she saw her roles in life. And I'm glad she could spend a little time with us here this evening on KMOX. Beth, before your diagnosis, you were a film director and an editor. I know you directed a lot of independent films and commercials and music videos. But your book also, it also discusses your encounters with other folks who were diagnosed with cancer, more from with your eye of a director and your eye as a producer or a filmmaker. But, you know, when you're a director, there's some level of detachment from your subject matter. But at some point, once you were going through cancer, that detachment was gone. Was that a difficult transition for you?
Well, you know, I was actually very fortunate. Before I found out I had cancer, I was writing a novel about a woman. I chose the subject of cancer, the woman, a woman who had cancer. And I didn't have the all the material necessary to actually write the book with authenticity. And 6 months later, it turned out I was actually my main character. So there was a, quite a lot of irony in that. I went through my own journey, my own story, with a tape recorder. I was collecting material for these stories, for this novel. So I had sort of a barrier. You know, I was out there collecting material like a researcher. You know, so it helped me. It helped protect me. I mean, I knew I was going through it, but I was collecting material for a book.
Right, but at some point, the researcher became the researchee.
Yeah. Well, I love stories, and I love character-driven stories. So I was put in the right place, unfortunately, at the right time.
One of the things that I've noticed that when someone's facing a potentially fatal condition, that the folks around them get nervous because they don't know what to say, they don't know what to do, and it's awkward. What would you suggest to folks who are just struggling with how do I talk to someone who's in this health crisis?
You're talking about somebody who doesn't have cancer that's talking to somebody who does have a diagnosis?
Exactly. Like family or friends or, you know, the folks you see at church or whatever where you just don't know what to say because they're going through this situation. What would you suggest to them?
If you don't have anything to say, don't say it. Just be there. Just sit there with them. Don't pretend you have something to say. Because no matter what advice you give somebody, it's not gonna feel right. There's nothing you can say, but being there, giving them something, maybe a lotion, a candle. Just your time. Maybe a book, as long as it's not an advice book or self-help or anything like that. Just yourself, your authentic self. Just, you know, be yourself and don't try to put too much emphasis on their illness.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you approach, and you mentioned this briefly in your book, but how did you approach the question of heaven and hell? How did you go through that process?
Oh, well, I have some funny chapters in my book about faith, and I know being Jewish, the Judaism, you know, they have this thing called the Midrash where everything's a question. There's no direct answers in Judaism. So I don't know when you're dying, if that's the first place you want to go. I always thought I'd go towards Buddhism. You know what? I'm not there yet. I don't know what I will do. I think spirituality, though, is the best thing that cancer can give you.
And did you come through that process with some degree of spirituality?
I still aspire to, you know,
good.
I feel like it's my calling.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things you also mentioned is that there's a difference between living with cancer and living after cancer because of the nature of your particular cancer. Obviously, coming back is an issue or a concern on a long-term basis. So what's the difference between living with cancer or living after cancer?
Well, I'll never live after cancer. I'll always have cancer. Mm-hmm. I'll be stage four forever. And I go for another CAT scan January, I think, 16th. It's a miracle to me that I've been 5 months without an infusion. I was last told that I would have to have one every month of my life, and I'm only 50, and I'm going to have one every month. It could be till who knows what that will be. I am living with cancer, and I got used to that idea. It doesn't help to think any other way. It just, it is.
Well, and you notice I found lots of what I thought to be very profound statements in your book. And towards the end of your book, you say this: I thank cancer as much as I fear it. I had forgotten to seize the moments of my life. It shouldn't come at a price. Now, Beth, I think that most people would be shocked that you could thank cancer as much as you fear it. How is that possible?
Well, like I said, I was struggling for 7 years with anxiety, depression, whatever you want to call it. And I was looping. And I could not, for the life of me, get myself out of it. And I'm a smart person. I'm intelligent. I'm sane enough, you know. But I just couldn't put this thing down. I really couldn't put this struggle that I had, this regret that I had, down. It took a life-threatening illness to make me, and it happened overnight. So in that way, I don't wake up every morning fearing my future, fearing what I did of the past. It all became so absurd. And here I am talking to you, living, presenting healthy. So when the day comes that I die, I'm going to think that I've had 2 years of living without that anxiety. It was pretty tough to wake up every day, not knowing you're dying from cancer, but knowing you have self-inflicted pain.
Well, since you've written the book and you talked about your novel that you were working on before, and now you were talking to other folks who had cancer, I suppose that you've become kind of a magnet for folks who are going through something that's similar to what you've been through. Have you met a lot of people, or and what types of people have you encountered who are going through similar things that you've been through?
Well, this is interesting. So the book is not necessarily relating to people who have cancer. And I think the people that are recognizing themselves in my writing are people it resonates with people universally. Anybody that's ever had a regret, anybody that's ever felt anything that I felt. And I'm thinking about now in the future, now that you're asking me these questions, maybe it's time for me to be a champion for cancer. I don't know. That wasn't my intent. You know, it's not a medical book. It's not cancer. It's not something that I would expect people who have cancer to want to reach out and pick up, because they're going to think, I'm living it. Why do I want to read somebody else's journey? But I want people to know it's not like that. They're just, everyone's going to find themselves in this book, whether you have cancer or not. And that's what I'm hearing.
Good. And you kind of alluded a moment ago about what are you going to do next. Have you given any thought to what your next project will be?
Yeah, I'm hoping it's not a memoir. Because that means I tend to manifest all my ideas, apparently, so that wouldn't be so good. But I am writing a new book. It's a novel, and it's about marriage. It will be along the same lines of where hopefully you will cry and laugh in the same sentence, and hopefully you'll be a page turner. But I didn't intend to write a memoir for this one, and I hope I don't have enough material to make the next book a memoir. So,
well, almost you do. I mean, you mention lots of and give lots of examples in your book about the struggles that you and your husband walk through during this process. That has to give you some degree of a starting point for your next project, doesn't it?
Oh, I love the idea of writing a book about marriage. I think it's so complex and complicated, two minds melding and having to live together. It's fascinating to me, and it's painful. You have to be very careful when you approach these situations. But I think everybody, again, every relationship, people can find themselves in it, and I hope to just capture it in the right way that makes sense. And so that's what I'm really working on right now.
Good.
I'm
looking forward to seeing your next project. We're talking to author Beth Kramer, author of the new book, Why Didn't I Notice Her Before? Beth, thanks so much for joining us this evening on Overnight America.
Thank you so much. So nice talking with you.
You're welcome. And when we come back from this break, just because it's kind of timely and it's something that we were talking about this evening, I want to talk to you just a little bit about some of the ways that we've progressed with the treatment of cancer. And I'm not going to deal with that because that's not exactly your most cheeriest subject of the evening. We'll talk about that for just a few moments, but we've got lots of things on tap for the rest of the show this evening. And in particular, this is one of the things that I would like to hear from you on. we're at the end of the alleged end of the decade, as I mentioned. But one of the things we always like to do at the end of the year, at the end of the decade, is to make predictions. What are your predictions for the next 10 years? You know, what do you think is going to happen technologically, politically, economically? You know, who's going to be the next star on YouTube? Whatever it might be, what are your thoughts and predictions about where we're going in the next year and in the next 10 years? Phone lines are open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Brad Young sitting in for Ryan Recker on Overnight America. Welcome back to Overnight America, KMOX. Glad you are with us this evening. Just about the end of the year, just about the end of the alleged decade. Of course, you know, you heard me say the decade really doesn't end till next year, but hey, we can pretend. So if you've got some predictions you would like throughout this evening, I would love to hear your predictions for the next year, you know, as long as they're, you know, clean. So give us a call. Let us know what those might be. In the meantime, one of the things that I talked about at the very top of the hour is a woman in Tennessee is being sued. She's being sued for allegedly for $25,000. But what happened was this. She posted a negative review about a doctor. She posted, I believe it was posted on Yelp. And the lawsuit accuses this woman, filed by the doctor, of defamation, libel, and false light for her comments on Yelp regarding the services of a certain doctor who's a neurologist in Tennessee. Now, I got the actual review because I wanted you to hear what she wrote. And then we can break down as to whether or not this is an assertion of fact, which is what's required for libel, or whether it's an assertion of an opinion, which is not libelous or slanderous. But here's what she wrote. This doctor's behavior today was totally unprofessional and unethical, to put it mildly. I will be reporting him to the state of Tennessee's medical review board and will be filing a formal complaint. How this guy is in business is beyond me. Since when did they start allowing doctors to throw a complete temper tantrum in front of patients and slam things when they get upset? Does he not belong in the medical field at all? Unquote. Now, I'm leaving the doctor's name out because that's not relevant to the story for our purposes. But I wanted to talk to you about this because anywhere you go today, this must have happened to me a dozen times in the month of December, where my wife and I would go to a restaurant or we would be someplace and someone would say, write a good review for us, or we've been in a shop, or we went shopping somewhere for a Christmas present, or whatever the case might be, and someone said, hey, make sure you post a positive review online. But the question becomes, if you post something this person doesn't like, can they sue you? Now, you know, one of the things, obviously, I'm an attorney, and so these issues I find very interesting because we're being encouraged on the one hand to use this medium ostensibly to complement the store we're at or the provider, the services that we've enjoyed. But if we write something they don't like, you know, can they turn around and sue us? So this particular woman in this example in Tennessee, she felt compelled to write a review after what she described as it was disrespectful. It was shocking behavior, according to her words. And she was accompanied at the appointment by her 67-year-old father. Now, the woman goes on to claim that the doctor became angry in the appointment when he noticed that she was recording her on her phone. And she said she does this during medical visits. Now, one of the things that I do in my legal profession is I send people a lot of times to IMEs, independent medical exams with other doctors, to be examined. And a lot of times people will bring in, you know, phones or recording devices to record those exams. And let me tell you, folks, doctors generally do not like that. So they certainly have the right to say, leave. I'm going to terminate this examination if you're going to insist on recording it. But in this particular instance, the woman became incensed, or the doctor rather became incensed, and apparently was yelling and screaming and so forth. Now, one of the things I looked up was, what's the law on this in Tennessee, recording? Now, recording in Tennessee, just like it is in Missouri and it is in Illinois, is a one-party consent state. Now, what does that mean? That means that you can, as long as you're a party to the conversation in question, you can record it. You can record any conversation to which you are a party. So what you cannot do is to record, you know, your daughter as she's talking to her boyfriend on the phone. You can't record that unless you're a party to the conversation. But if you're a party to that conversation, you can record anything that you like. So from her perspective, recording it was legal. But that's really not what the issue was. The issue was whether or not after this exam, after this, really after she posted the review on Yelp, could the doctor then sue this particular person for what she said? Now, there's a couple of things I want to mention. Anytime you're examining these kinds of libel or slander issues, you've got to differentiate between stating an opinion of fact or stating an opinion. Those are two different things. You can like, if you can go to a steakhouse and say, I like it, I didn't like it, that's your opinion. If you go out and post, it had mold on it, and it appeared as if it had been rotten for the past 4 months, you know, that's more of an assertion of fact rather than an opinion. So those are the things, and before we kind of break this down a little bit more, you have to differentiate between fact and opinion. But in the meantime, Mike's got a New Year's prediction that I want to hear. Mike, welcome to KMOX.
How you doing? Now, here's my my predictions.
Okay, Mike, lay it on me, Mike.
All right, now, it might be impossible, but fun and serious possibility may never happen. All right, what my prediction is, and eventually I think the New Year's prediction is, people are going to have a better year and learn from their mistakes. And a possibility that might be an eye-opener that we won't expect and getting their mind off of Donald Trump and people, I think it's possible we can end up with a woman president. And I tell you who it would be.
Who would it be, Mike?
Amy, the Democrat. I tell you why.
Amy Klobuchar. So Mike, Bobo, you are predicting right here on Camo X that Amy Klobuchar could be the next president of the United States.
And let me tell you why before they think it's funny. She's been getting votes, well, I understand, because I check and listen a lot. She's been getting a lot of support from Republicans and Democrats. Now, the story I heard, she took the heat that Donald Trump should not be impeached. Like some prediction that Bernie Sanders would get the nomination, I think it's a possibility Amy will get it, and a lot of people like her on both sides. Not all Republicans. Some Republicans like her. Some Democrats like her. It would be shocked if we got a woman president. It seems unbelievable. I think it's a possibility, or at least she gets the nomination.
And, Mike, do you think it's a problem that she raised about $17.19 during the last quarter? Do you think that's a problem?
That is a problem, but anything with God, nothing's impossible. And I admit it'd be a miracle, but I would be shocked if we admit this and get off. Wouldn't you be shocked if that actually happened? I would
be shocked, and you said it would take a miracle, but you know what, Mike? This is the season of miracles, and so I guess anything could happen. Hey, buddy, thanks for calling in this evening on Overnight America. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. You know, Mike, we love Mike. But Klobuchar, if you want to go, there are betting websites right now. And Mike, you can certainly do this. There are betting websites where you can go and place your bet on who's going to be the next president. And I got to tell you, last time I checked, which was over the weekend, I think Amy Klobuchar was below a 1% chance. I'm Brad Young. We're going to carry on our discussion about Yelp reviews after this break on Overnight America. Don't go away.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.